Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CrimeWire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts, along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs, for families of violent crimes to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private eye and author, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there on top of the crime at the top of their game. CrimeWire is a place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. I cannot talk. If you are a friend or a family member and you'd like to send the CrimeWire team information on unsolved or suspicious death cases, or you'd like to be considered for a segment on a case for a future show, please email us at crimewire@gmail.com. Joining us tonight is Investigator Pat Caristo, and Denny Griffin is reversing himself, and he is now our crime analyst for the evening. Welcome, everybody, to the show.
Hello.
Thanks, Susan.
Hello.
Dan, you want
to? Yes, please. I'd like to just start off with on behalf of Teen Track USA, they've asked that we make an announcement about a missing teenager they're looking for out of Logan, Utah. And if anyone's in the Logan, Utah area, they're trying to find Catherine, K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E, middle name Ray, R-A-E, Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N. She disappeared on October 15th of this year. She's described as 17 years old, white female with blonde hair, 5 feet 2 inches tall, weighs 125 pounds, with blue eyes. Katie wears a full set of blue braces on her teeth and has two scars approximately 1 inch long along her left jawline. Anyone having information should contact TeenTrack.org at area code 602-486-3979 or area code 303-859-1751. And if you have any information about Katie or if you're in that area and would like to volunteer to help Teen Track out with the search or distributing flyers and so forth, please give them a call at either of those numbers. Thank you.
We're going to continue case coverage on the blatant disregard for families in Oklahoma. The website where these cases are listed is www.justiceforthedead.com. I won't spell it out, justiceforthedead.com. And we're going to talk about the Ashley Dawn Thompson case. Ashley died on January 1st, 2004, at her home in Rogers County, Oklahoma. She was only 15 years old. Her boyfriend at the time was supposed to be in a guest room and claimed he entered her bedroom through a window on her terrace and found her hanging in her closet. This man, Joshua Wayne Brown, is now in prison on a subsequent rape charge. Yet Ashley's death was ruled a suicide despite the fact that she was murdered. In fact, only 7 months before Ashley's death, another girlfriend of Joshua Brown's died by hanging. Joining us is her parents, Stacy and Noble Thompson. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask the first question, and then everybody can join in. On New Year's night, Ms. Thompson, your daughter stays at home, and you allow the boyfriend to stay in your home in a separate area of the house. On New Year's Day, you were awoken by Joshua Wayne Brown. What did he say? What do you remember?
He came upstairs and he says, you need to come downstairs. Something's wrong with Ashley. I think she's dead. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And he's like, you need to come. And I noticed he also had a coat on, a black down coat. He's like, you need to come downstairs. I think she's dead. I followed him downstairs. We turned into her bedroom, and to the left, I could see in her closet that she was laying on her left side, and her knees were kind of drawn up. Her pants were right below her waistline, and they were open. You could see her underwear. She had blood coming out of her mouth, and her lips were blue. And I'm like, you know, I was yelling, what happened? And he kept saying, oh, I found her hanging, and I took her down. And then my attention went right back to Ashley. And by this time, my husband had followed me downstairs just within seconds, was behind me. And that's what we've seen. But even being in shock, I noticed nothing was disturbed in the closet. It didn't seem right. Her head was like even with two aisles of shoes, and there was no mess in the closet whatsoever. Like,
what do you mean by there was no mess? You mean that things were neatly, very tidy, arranged?
Right. Her clothes.
Hold on a minute, Vito. If you're walking in on a crime scene and you see supposedly somebody's been hanged in there, wouldn't there be a mess of clothes or things in disarray?
Oh, yeah, definitely, without a doubt, because the person, let's say, that went in there either to hang themselves or somebody that hung them, everything's going to be pretty messy, I would think, in there, you know? So, I mean, that's the first sign, you know, right there. After you're done with that, I have a question for Mr. Thompson, but go ahead and finish what you're doing there.
And basically, you know, that was just the first thing I noticed, is nothing was messed up. Another really bizarre thing to me was all laying in her room, and I have no idea where these came from. There was 10 to a dozen half-pint Southern Comfort bottles, and they looked like they were just placed around her bed and in her bedroom. They were all empty. I have no idea. We did not keep any type of bottles like that in our house. She was not that kind of drinker. I couldn't even. To me, it looked like they were just placed around the room.
Were they able
to
determine
where they came from?
Had they determined whether or not she had been drinking in the autopsy?
Yes, she did have alcohol in her system. Her sister told me that Josh had provided a bottle of cherry vodka, and that he was getting mad at Ashley because Ashley wasn't drinking. She was leaving like 3 days after her death to Hilton Head, South Carolina, for her first modeling tour.
Right.
But she also was pretty controlled by him, by what I understand now, from her friends and her sister. And she told her sister that he was getting mad at her because it was the last time they were going to be together before she left.
Mrs. Thompson, how old is Josh? How old was Joshua at that time? How much older was he?
He had turned 18 in October.
Okay, so he's 3 years older than your daughter, right?
Yes, well, it's, but yeah.
And Mr. Thompson, if I can ask you, you were a 41-year police veteran in Oklahoma. Were you a cop?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, how far away? In the same town or how far away from?
Well, no. Our house is located about 2 miles outside the city limits of Ooliga, Oklahoma, where I'm the chief of police. I'm still the chief of police here.
Okay. Then you must have known. I mean, being an ex-cop myself, I mean, you must have known officers in, you know, the county where this happened, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, did you after this was all done and you could see all the stuff that was done wrong, being an ex-cop, did they grant you any more liberty to explain to you properly more, you know, give you recognition that way as a former chief of police as to what was going on here?
No. In fact, you know, you would think there would be some, you know, professional courtesy to let me
right.
know what's going on, but there was none of that. In fact, they were very standoffish with me.
Okay. Now we've been going through a lot of things here with the medical examiner's office on numerous cases. Now, during your whole career, which stretches a long time, did you hear anything negative about the ME's cases in the past, or did you know that they were under a cloud of suspicion at all before this, or no?
No, I wasn't aware that they were under a cloud of suspicion, you know, at this time. And, of course,
right.
this was in 2004.
Right, right.
I think, too, that because of the Shonda Turner case, which we've had on Crime Wire, that was really what prompted or sparked all of these other cases.
Mm-hmm.
It was all kept very quiet. This is in Rogers County. The other one was in Garvin County. There's other counties involved here. And so you've got throughout the state families still coming forward every day, Vito and Denny and Pat, with these kind of situations, these cases where they're stamped like cattle, the death certificates, every one of them.
Can I ask another follow-up question on the alcohol in your daughter's system? Were they able to determine how much alcohol was in her system?
Neville, do you remember what they said?
They said it was 0.13.
So that wouldn't justify all those bottles around her bed?
Oh, no, no.
Okay,
no.
So there was no connection. In other words, she hadn't drunk all that liquid.
No, no.
Okay.
And I don't think that it would have mattered, with all due respect, because of, you know, her nails were pulled back.
I wasn't looking at it for that. I was trying to determine. I mean, somebody could have forced her to drink that. I wondered whether or not that was part of the crime. So if it wasn't part of the crime, then somebody staged that for some reason.
Why,
yeah.
That looked like to me. Her sister said that, and of course she told him some guilt, but she said that they were giving her a hard time because she was wearing it. OU football sweatshirt, and they got her to take two shots of cherry vodka.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing that Nicole knows of that she had drank.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was just curious, is Joshua a local boy? Was he from the area, or was he a retread from somewhere else?
Well, he lived in Owosso, which is about 15 miles south of Ulaga.
How did they meet?
Through some mutual friends. A lot of kids from Owosso, Ulaga, Claremore kind of tend to hang out together at different places, and they met through some friends.
And under what circumstances did the hanging occur? What was used for the hanging?
See, that's there was those sash belts, or kind of a nylon silk type material, and they hang down kind of by your knee.
Mm-hmm.
There were two of those tied together. Now, we were told it was a noose. What I remember seeing is like some big, large loop. I don't know how he would have untied any that type of material with any type of weight on it, but it was, like I said, that real thin nylon crochet.
You're right in exactly what you said. That how was it? Was it untied? Was it cut down? It would have been very difficult to untie that. You were absolutely right.
No, I mean, I know, because the girls would tie them on their, you know, as belts with their jeans, and I'd have to help them get them done. I mean, they're, all the kinds of little threads and nylon silk. And two all together would have made about, at least 11 feet.
And isn't this mind-boggling, though, too, that with your husband's being, you know, his police career, that nothing could have been done, that how they didn't do the crime scene. She wasn't even pronounced dead there because the equipment wasn't working. The EKG machine, the heart monitor, that in of itself is disturbing.
Right. And actually, you know, we just got part of the sheriff's report up, like the beginning of this year, maybe? And they never would let us see them.
Mm-hmm. Did you get them through the Freedom of Information Act or through your lawyer?
Jay
Mendros?
They finally, when they changed sheriffs, they gave you part of it, and that how it happened.
Have you gone through the Freedom of Information Act to try to get some other documents?
They were holding them because they said that it was combined with some OSBI reports and that OSBI reports weren't public record. We insisted on OSBI 3.5 months. There was vomit, one of her fingernails, and blood all along the side of her bed and a washcloth that had blood and vomit in her bathroom. And the sheriff's department just absolutely refused to come out and collect any evidence. They never even took statements from me and Noble.
And what about from the suspect, the person that was there that was that morning, Joshua, what happened with him? Was he in the squad? Was he taken in and arrested?
Okay,
no,
well,
they told him to go home.
They told him to go home.
Yes.
Danny.
Yes. Even after he admitted to giving my daughter a Xanax, a Xanax and two shots of vodka is what it was, or some type of cherry vodka.
Denny, Vito, Pat, I mean, this guy is 18 years old. She's 15. There's a few things here that should have been done, and they were right there.
That's all I kept saying is, what did you do, Josh? I mean, what did you do? And he admitted right there in front of the detective, and they told him to leave. The minute he said that he gave her a half of a Xanax and cherry vodka, they said leave.
Peter, does this make sense to you?
No, I mean, that part, you know, as an ex-cop, that part makes no sense at all, because at the very minimum, you got charges to arrest him for right on the scene, you know. Number one. Number two, you know, Mr. Thompson, if I can ask you, can you explain a little bit, I'm a little confused about this, the return of her body back to the ME's office after she had already been embalmed. Like, what was that all about? I mean, whose call was that?
Well, it was apparently...
we don't really know.
We're not really sure. It could have been with the investigator, because on the... on the 3rd of January, which was 2 days, or well, actually, it was on the 2nd of January, the day after her death, the boy and his family came to the house. And at that time, we're still in shock. All my family was there. And so we let him in. And, you know, we were just, like I say, we were still in shock. We still weren't positive what happened. There was a lot of things that were going on. And he went into her bedroom and went into her closet. And there was some, my other daughter and my sister from Florida was in the bedroom. And he went into that closet and closed the door and was in there for a little bit. We didn't know this till after the fact. And then he came out and he approached me and said, "I just found a note." And he handed me a note, and the note said, "I'm so sorry. I love you all, Ashley." And he said he found it under the laundry basket. Well, we knew better than that, because, you know, I was looking, me and my brother and my sister, we looked through that whole closet looking for, you know, if in fact she did, you know, kill herself, you know, she would have left a note. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I stressed that to the investigator, and Josh overheard, he heard all that, saying, "My daughter wouldn't have done this. She would have left a note." Well, then he comes up with this note. So I immediately, and then within a few minutes, him and his dad and his dad's girlfriend left the house. And I called the investigator and told him about the boy planting this note. And the investigator said, "That doesn't mean he killed her."
Oh, gee whiz.
Yeah.
Well,
Mr. Thompson, what do you know about that investigator's background?
Right.
His, his history. How many cases of this nature has he worked? I mean, is you know.
He's worked numerous cases. He had worked for the sheriff's office since 1991, but he was a narcotics investigator. He wasn't a homicide investigator.
Okay.
And he had a severe drinking problem.
Okay.
And it's New Year's Day.
That was common. That was that was common knowledge throughout the county.
So he was more incompetent than in collusion with the boy. He wasn't trying to give the boy some leeway. It was just that he was incompetent.
Well, that, and then after we did more investigation through the months and years, and
mm-hmm.
we hired the private investigator, we determined that there was very well probably a link between the boy and the investigator.
Oh, okay. There you go.
To the point of that he knew the boy's dad and
okay.
dad's girlfriend because dad's girlfriend was an informant.
Okay. And this other young lady that was also hanged, did this investigator work on that case too?
No, that case happened in Louisiana. That girl That girl was in a group home, believe it or not, for drugs that Josh had got. That Josh had got her started on. And she was in a group home and supposedly hang herself, but there's some questions on that case.
Well, the family
exactly.
doesn't believe it. And so now, tell us where he is now.
Well, he's in the penitentiary now.
But not for any of this?
No. He's he had contact with another girl just within the last 2 years. That was 15 at the time, with him being 22. And had sexual relations with her. They filed charges, and he was convicted of.
I don't know. I'm already nervous.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yes.
We're here. Yeah, he was convicted of rape and several counts of rape and sodomy.
Tell us a little bit about the pathologist that you hired and his findings.
It was Dr. Howard Edelman. He's out of New York. He's a renowned medical examiner, a forensic pathologist. He's a technical advisor for CNN, and he's done numerous famous autopsies. He's got a resume like a book, and he looked at the autopsy. Of course, it was done after the embalming.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, his conclusion was that autopsy after embalming was useless.
And did they come up with a cause of death?
Yes,
was the cause of death?
They listed the cause of death as suicide by hanging.
And what happened on a photo that you had that you saw? What Ashley was clutching the gurney.
Yes. At the ME's office.
At the ME's office, Vito, Denny, Pat. So that means, because dead people don't clutch gurneys, she was alive.
Right. Well,
yes.
The cause of death is very significant, and I wanted to know how they made that determination. Was she dead before and made it look like a hanging? Was she actually, did she have the petechial hemorrhaging in her eyes, all those indicators of a hanging?
Yes, she did have some petechiae.
She did? Oh, okay.
Yes. But that would also go along with strangulation.
Exactly, and that's what I'm trying to ascertain in my mind. I mean, hanging is very difficult to accomplish. And it's also very difficult to take someone down. Where was this scarf over what? The door, the rod, a hook? What was it?
The rod.
The closet.
In the closet.
The closet rod.
That makes no sense how he could have gotten that down without cutting that down.
So
there was no way of that kind of material.
He told the investigator that he lifted the loop off of her head. He told me that he untied it.
Oh, no. The mechanics of doing that, sir, I don't have to tell you that. I don't mean to imply that I know something more than you don't know. I'm just incredulous that that they would allow that to go unchallenged.
Yeah, well,
and that they let him go that night. If he was anything at all, he was certainly a witness, and he should have been detained.
Well, they set him in a car. They had him fill out a statement about eight or nine lines.
Okay.
And then that's when they sent him home. But the thing about in the state of Oklahoma, if an adult, which he was at the time,
mm-hmm.
provides a controlled narcotic to a minor,
that's a
10-to-life felony in Oklahoma. And he admitted to giving her a narcotic right there in front of the investigator.
But the investigator, you determined later, was friends with the family, his father.
Well, we suspect that he knew who those people were.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it really hit me hard a couple of days later, the girlfriend of the boy's dad called the house, and she was griping at us because we were pointing the finger at Josh. And she said, well, the investigator came over here, said, she didn't call him investigator. She said, Larry's already talked to Josh, and he came in and he told us that y'all were pointing the finger, and that's why he was there to talk to him.
Is he still a detective on that department?
No, no.
What? How did he come not to be?
Well, in March of 07, he supposedly resigned.
Did Joshua write a letter at one point called Unforgiven?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us,
Denny, why don't you read part of it?
Okay, with everybody's permission, I will.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm not going to lie to you. I was pretty pissed when you wanted me to call you back because I thought it was weird in the first place. Your mom was taking pictures before you went out to eat, and I thought maybe you might have been with someone else, plus the fact that you wanted to get off the phone like as soon as you got on with me. But it's all good. I'm just selfish. I always want you all to myself. But I guess your dad and something can borrow you for a couple of hours. But that's all. Nobody else ever. I'm sorry, baby, that sometimes I don't trust you like I should. All it does is stress me the blank out. I'm not giving you the respect you deserve for being such a perfect girlfriend. I love you, babe, and I always will. Just give me a little bit of time, and I promise I'll get better at the trust thing. I won't read the rest of it, but...
it's written 5 years later.
Yeah. Well, what are your thoughts about that letter and Joshua's state of mind?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I beat myself up over that because I don't know how I missed the signs, but she was very much in a domestic relationship with him. And after the fact, you know, I look at things that were said and what was going on, and his father was an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a lot of, you know, I remember seeing a mark on her neck a couple of months before she died, and they were sitting on the couch, and I glanced, and I seen this red mark across one side of her neck, and I was like, what is that? And she says, the first thing Josh says is, what, do you think I did that? I didn't do that. I was like, Josh, I wasn't even thinking that you would have done something like that. I was asking her how she got it, and she said they were wrestling around, and her hoodie string rubbed on her neck. And, you know, just little things, you know, isolating her from her friends. And I remember she came to me, and she says, Mom, for some reason, Josh is trying to tell me that you're on drugs. I said, well, I don't know why he would say something like that. It's like he was, at the end, was trying to get her not to like us.
Right, to isolate her. And I bet you that's a pattern in his other relationships. Was he ever given a psychiatric evaluation by the courts?
No, not to my knowledge. We tried real hard to get him to take a polygraph test.
Mm.
And he never would do it. He always says he did it, but he never did.
What is
hey, Mr. Thompson, let me ask you, have you spoken over the years to the DA or prosecutor out there about this case?
Till I was blue in the face.
And because I'm sure you must have dealt with the prosecutor many times as a
yes.
police chief. And what's the prosecutor's take on all of this?
Well, when I confronted him about the drugs, he said, well, about filing a drug charge on the boy, he said, well, we don't want to hamper a murder case.
We don't want to seem like we're picking on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
And wouldn't we're out of time basically, but wouldn't the death certificate also have to be changed to homicide?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to have you back on. For those listening, the site is www.justiceforthedead.com. Thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Thompson, and we'll have you back on, and we'll go over some more of these cases. We're actually going to bring on another case from the same site, another tragedy. So thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you
so
much. I appreciate it.
Good night.
Thank you very much.
Good
night.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Some case, huh, folks? Unbelievable. Now we're going to talk a little bit about a case, a girl named Katrina. In Tuttle, Oklahoma, on October the 28th, 2009, after spending 9 days in a coma, Katrina Hill Rivera died. The Tuttle police took the word of a former abusive boyfriend at face value that on October 19th, Katrina jumped from his moving vehicle in a suicidal state. The Tuttle, Oklahoma Police Department forwarded the abuser statement to the medical examiner's office, which relied solely on the driver's story. The ME's office quickly rubber-stamped it, suicide, with no independent investigation as required by law, and not even an autopsy. No Oklahoma traffic collision report was done, and there were photographs taken of the crime scene the night of the incident. Joining us tonight is her mother, Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to our show.
Hello. How are you?
Okay. We get a little discouraged on these Oklahoma cases on and on now for several months. It just seems like it's the same story, Michelle. Let me ask you an initial question, then we'll open it up to anybody. No one looked into the driver's past and his abusive history with Katrina until a few months later, right?
Correct.
By that time, it was too late. The ME's office had already made up its mind, and up to this day now, what, a year later, they refuse to change the cause of death, right?
That is correct.
Tell us a little bit about your daughter. How old was she?
Katrina was 27 when she passed.
Okay, and this boyfriend was how old? About at that time?
I would say 28.
28.
I believe he was 28.
And they were together for how long?
Probably on and off for about 3 years.
3 years. Now, since this is a fairly new case, I know it's a year old, but a fairly new case from a lot of the ones that we get, Michelle, where does the investigation stand any place now, or is it closed until new evidence is brought to them?
At this point, the DA has placed it at closed, and we are seeking help through Jay Mendros.
Oh,
and Jay Mendros is the lawyer on the Turner case, and she's the one that Justice for the Dead. And again, it's because of the Shonda Turner case, who was murdered, in my opinion, in 2000, that all of this had sparked.
Let me ask you, Michelle, knowing your daughter like you did, would she ever commit suicide that way?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Tell the audience a little bit before we get into other questions, what type of a girl she was.
Well, she was a nurse, and she worked for one of the hospitals in Oklahoma City. She was well-educated, very outgoing, just full of a breath of fresh air. She never had everybody she always knew would want to be her friend. Very outgoing.
Hmm. You know, let me say this, and this goes to Pat and Susan and Denny. I've often spoke about cases of this nature, and I have said in the past that somebody, say, being pushed out of a car, or two people standing on the hill of a big mountain, or something of that nature, cruise ship, okay? I've often said that that is the, if somebody's looking to kill somebody, and I hate to use it that way to give people ideas, but a simple push of somebody off of a cliff or something like that, unless there is cameras somewhere around that actually films this, be it a cruise ship or whatever type of a situation, it's almost a foolproof way. Now, you're driving in a car, you have a fight, you use your strength, and you push her out the door as a car going X amount of miles an hour. Denny, pretty foolproof, especially if a police department doesn't know what they're doing, right?
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, I can't help but make this statement because we've been covering all these Oklahoma cases now for several over the last few weeks. And I sometimes if you watch a made-for-TV movie, and it's a mystery suspense type film, and you watch it, and because of your knowledge of how things are supposed to work as far as investigations and so forth, and you think, geez, I can't stand to watch this any longer. Nobody's bothered to research the procedures, and they're just making it up for entertainment purposes, and it has no basis in reality to how a real investigation would go. And when I listen to some of these stories, I'm thinking it's one of those horribly made movies. But it's real life. I mean, it's very sickening to me that when the investigations aren't done at all or done so sloppily that, you know, it's like something that should be fiction. And it's just hard for me to get my head around some of these cases that these are real-life scenarios and they happen. It bothers me.
But I also think as we go back to the Garvin County 3 and those cases, same thing with DeVinny, same thing with Turner. Now this one is that to me, this is not the suicide thing is, and the Emmy's issue is secondary to the fact that this is murder. She had an order of protection. She was in an abusive relationship. He had a history. I'm tired of these. I'm tired of seeing these across the country. No different than this. So to me, this goes to domestic violence, intimate partner homicide. This one and the one. Ashley Dawn Thompson, same thing.
Not only that, the Highway Patrol gets involved in this case, okay, with the help of the district attorney. A trooper by the name of Patrick Serber, he issues a 300-plus page report confirming her death was no suicide, but rather a homicide. I mean, all my years as a cop, I never did anywhere near a 300-page report on anything. And now he does this extensive report that says it's a homicide. Michelle, didn't that do anything to stir the pot to get this reopened at all?
No, actually, the DA's office went on three separate occasions to the ME's office along with us at a couple of times and requested that they change the death certificate and tried to give them copies of the report, and they refused.
See, this also goes to the confusion. This goes to the confusion of not being able to paint a picture, not understanding all the components. First responders, I mean, the 300-page report is very important, but she was murdered.
Yeah, but you're dealing with an honest trooper, Susan, that
yeah,
goes
I know.
Out
no,
on,
I'm saying.
Goes
no,
out
absolutely.
On a limb and it says, here's my
that's
proof.
Right.
This
right.
all my bullet point proofs. Here.
And for them
and
to throw
nothing.
It out,
yeah.
You know, who was this guy, Michelle? Was he somebody that, did he have any connections to anything? Was a family member in law enforcement? Is he somebody that people feared?
Actually, yes, there is some kind of connection. The family does have money. There's been several incidences where people have had fear in that community.
Did your daughter ever leave anything like a journal? Did she talk to you? Was there ever, do you have any documents from anything that she tried to get? You know, was there police reports that she had that you have someplace?
We have several. Since the case has been turned over, we've actually done some investigating of our own, and we've pulled more reports where he has been abusive in the past in Oklahoma City, as well as he tried to isolate her and take her to Texas, and we were able to grab some reports on that. There have been VPOs filed on him from several different individuals, including his mother and his father, as well as a previous girlfriend. And we have extensive reports on domestic violence abuse, and it's verbatim. I mean, my daughter, unfortunately, at one point, he pulled her hair out of her head, but she had no hair on both sides of her head. And we have found that another individual has similar circumstances that have happened, and they haven't, and that's not even in the reports as of yet.
And have you talked to this other person?
We spoke to her family.
Okay, and how old is this other person?
She is a couple years younger than my daughter.
Okay, can somebody go get her on tape for Jay, statement type of thing? Is anybody able to do that?
We are actually working on, we're supposed to meet with Jay within a couple of days and see how we're going to go ahead and approach that.
Okay. That's very important.
Did she live with this guy?
Previously, yes, and she does have a child. She has
Your daughter has a child, or this other woman does?
The other woman. The other woman has a child. And she does have a VPO out on him as well. He's held her hostage, tied her hands and feet, put a bandana in her mouth. And these are reports that we just got just the other day.
Pat, weigh in on this, please.
Well, I just to start at the beginning, why was no investigation done routinely? It seems like no one is doing the basics. I don't know who's dropping the ball on these cases. It can't be just the medical investigator. It has to be a systematic
Well, the medical examiner lost their accreditation in 2009. They're not even accredited.
No, I know that. I'm just saying that we just can't say it's the medical investigator's problem because they didn't even do a preliminary scene investigation. It said that there was no reconstruction of the situation.
Hey, Pat.
Yeah.
My daughter has lived out there now in Oklahoma for 15 years, and she has told me numerous times it is the worst old boy network that you can find across the country. And like I've always said, when you have no accountability to anybody,
you don't
have to worry about accountability, then it's kind of like, let's go for a drink. I mark this case closed. I mean, I hate to put it so common like that, but that is exactly what goes on out there.
Well, and this poor trooper that did all that work, and no one would listen. I hope he gets a pat on the back for at least trying to help. Now that
Does
doesn't help the
have
family.
Does any communication with him, Pat, at all? Does she still talk to him? Is she able to talk to him still, Michelle?
Say that.
Sorry.
Do you have any contact with this trooper that tried to help this case?
We have not spoken to him in quite a while. Since they closed the case, we have not had contact with him again. He did assure us that he did not believe that Katrina committed suicide and that this was homicide. He had a conversation with the perpetrator right before they closed the case, and he was very contradictory to some of the things that he had said in the past. So I guess what they're wanting us to do is if we were to sue him civilly, that we could have him deposed in that county so that he would purge himself.
Very good idea.
Yes,
Ahead,
the standards for getting a conviction or a judgment in a civil matter is less than a criminal matter, and you don't need as much proof. You don't need a high level of proof, and that may be something to go on and make sure that you don't allow your time frame for filing some kind of a civil matter run out. I don't know what it is in your state. In New Mexico, it's 3 years, and families don't realize that. And then the next thing you know, they're finally out of their shock and trauma, and then they want to do something, and the statute of time has run out. So
some years,
please,
some states, it's 2 years too, Pat.
Right. So make sure you know that, so that when and if you want to make a decision to go civilly, you haven't let the time run out.
Hey,
well,
Susan.
Yes.
Susan, on a future show, we may want to reach out to this officer if he's allowed to talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
You
know what? I have some other ideas, and I've been talking to Jay about this, and this is the first time that we've had the mother for this case on. And I think that there's some things in talking to the special prosecutor on the Garvin County cases, because to me these two are the same things, that can be done. What county was this in, Michelle?
This was in Grady County.
Okay, Grady County. And there's certain things that can be done. I mean, you are really looking at, to me, 1960-style justice here. I mean, when I was out there a few weeks ago, it's like it reminded me of the civil rights, the way people were treating the families when I was there, the way people were not treating them, spitting on their shoes, basically, until some facts and things were painted and presented that people finally understood that none of these cases were right, that none of these cases had facts, that they hadn't heard the facts, that people were covering them up. Oklahoma, as we have seen, and we've been putting these cases on since the summer, has such a pattern of conduct in a different sort of a way. And what Jay Mendros has been doing on the Justice for the Dead site is they've been trying to reform the medical office. And what they've been trying to do is, you know, get them to change those things. What we've been screaming about is these are murders, and that to take and pull specific ones out so that we can get some things done like we did in Garvin County. This is no different, because this is the same kind of a pattern of conduct. And, Pat, I don't know. I'm not trying to disagree with you. I think, though, that somehow the ME has the final decision regardless. And somehow they're the real problem behind all of them, because they don't take into account anything anybody says.
Well,
or they don't do their own investigation.
But also the ME can't deal with anything if law enforcement doesn't give them facts to begin with. But I think it goes back to, and I don't remember who said it. Oh, now I forgot what I was going to say. I had a brilliant thought and it went right out of my head.
But
wondering if there's any, and this may seem silly, but this happened years ago where police departments were manipulating, I'll say that positively, manipulating crime statistics to get money. That was when there was
They're
money.
They're still doing it.
Well, is that what's going on here? So that if they don't have this number of homicides, they get more money, and so therefore they let it go. Is that what there has to
be? I don't think so. I think it's what Mr. Thompson's been doing, and he didn't get to say this on the air, but he's been advocating for cleat hours, that most of these police departments do not have it. Vito, explain the cleat thing.
I don't really know that, Susan, to be very
okay,
honest.
The cleat hours are the amount of hours on a crime scene.
Oh,
right.
Training,
okay.
And they don't have them in various counties throughout the state of Oklahoma. And what he's been trying to do is get that changed, mandate it, because, you know, howdy doody's coming on a crime scene. He's never even been on one. He has no training in the academy. It's like domestic violence.
See,
there,
Susan,
I know for a fact, 2 hours training.
Susan, being in ME's offices and being in prosecutors' offices, the way it usually goes down, and the ME loves to hear this type of stuff, the police officers are, the ME says to the police officers, or the prosecutor says to the police officers, what do you think? The guys say, well, it appears to be a suicide. We don't see anything else that appears to change our mind. Okay, you comfortable with that? I've heard that so many times. Okay, are you comfortable with that? Yes, yeah, we are. Okay, that's it. We're gonna go with that. And ME loves it, because you hate to say it, but I know in Connecticut and most of the states, the bodies are stacked up at these ME's offices.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they really are. And it's an eye-opening thing when you go and you see that. You see the truck pulling in every 10 minutes as you're sitting there looking out the window. So the last thing they want, or the best thing they want, is to have a case closed right away. And that's what's going on here. But Oklahoma is the worst. I mean, you know, I've kidded around and said on the show many times, Oklahoma is not okay. And they're the farthest in the 50 states that is not okay. That's for sure. It's a horrible. We talk about, it's so aggravating because we say the same scenarios week after week on these Oklahoma cases. There's nothing different. It's the same chain of events. Goes on with from the boyfriend to this to that to the ME's office to the prosecutor to the cops that investigated it. It's the same exact thing case after case.
But isn't
case
it also, too, first responders don't have any training. They
oh,
don't
no,
know,
they don't
how
even know how
at
to protect the crime scene. They don't even
no,
know.
And,
right,
they don't even know.
Scene.
No, right. And if they had checked on this asshole, pardon me, who you know, in
a
computer. Pardon
it's
me?
A technical term.
Yes. That's my technical term for.
Hey, Denny, jump in on this, Denny.
Yeah, come on, Denny.
Former investigator. I mean, doesn't this, don't you see the aggravation here as the same scenario week after week when it deals with Oklahoma?
I'm telling you, Vito, it's really, like I was saying earlier, I get terribly frustrated because it's over and over and over and over again. And it seems like, you know, it's like, well, pulling teeth trying to get anything changed or anything reopened or looked at. And then if you have certainly evidence, you know, when there was not a good investigation done initially or no investigation, there's no evidence or evidence was contaminated or disappeared or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a nightmare. And you wonder, I always like to think that eventually justice will prevail. But it's very tough when you have these things that seem to go wrong right off the bat, right out of the chute, there are problems. And I can't imagine how I would feel if I were personally involved in the case if it was my loved one. I don't know what I would do. I mean, the frustration, I'd probably be in the slammer myself, be threatening the officials there to get off their rear ends and do the right thing because
no,
they
don't want a hair on our head harmed down there. That's different. Michelle, do you have a specific? I know you're on the Justice for the Dead, and to me, that's not enough. Are you computer literate? Are you pretty good on the computer?
I can try. I can get around.
Okay,
what
you need to go to Google and your daughter's full name, Justice for Katrina Hill Rivera.com. Okay. You need to start putting together the facts of this together because it crawls through there. It's nice that, like I said, it's on one site, but there's so many of these cases there. You need to separate that out and have your daughter's own website, okay? So, you know, and put the information in there. You can do it on Blog Talk. You can do it on, but you just get the Google name. Like I said, it's $10, and you do it the .com justice for, and then you know, news stories, anything that comes out, the rally that you did today, you start putting it out there. That crawls, that puts pressure, it builds it up. There's strength in numbers. But it also needs to be separated.
Okay. I can try.
Okay.
And how about the new legislators from Oklahoma, the newly elected people? Is there anybody that is willing to listen?
In front of the Senate in February, I believe I'm going to be down there. They're going to be doing some things to facilitate that, to reform the medical examiner's office. But in the meantime, Michelle, you need to do those things and update it and get it out there. If you want, Jane knows how to get a hold of me. Just get my email address from her, and I can send you a couple things to put in there, okay? Because it's separate. This is a separate. This is a murder, and this is a. It's a separate distinction from the ME's case, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why this is so important for you.
Okay.
So that's what I'd like you to do because it just helps the case move in a different direction. You know, you have two things going on. Specifically, is the Justice for the Dead site, which is the medical examiner's misappropriation of what the cause of death was, and or the determination of it. And then you have your own specific case where, you know, this is a murder case. So that's what you're going to try to build. You're going to basically build his pattern of behavior on this thing, okay, and what happened.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay?
Well,
yes.
And don't forget your time frame for any civil action. Don't let that time frame run out on you.
Or just ask Jay to you know, if we all, well, maybe we should talk and then try to figure something out, okay?
That'll work. Thank you.
I'd throw a question out there if I could. We were just talking about civil actions, wrongful death suits, and so on. One of the primary motivations, of course, would be to get the person of interest or suspect under oath when that mm-hmm. wasn't done during the police investigation. But wouldn't that also be a venue, because you'd have to introduce evidence?
Yes.
Also expose the poor investigations, the lack
yes.
of autopsies. And I mean, you not only could depose the suspect, you could depose the first responders, the ME's people, the cops. I mean, you could use that as an opportunity. All these people, make them account for what they did or what they didn't do.
Right. You get subpoena power, and then you can subpoena any reports that everybody says you can have before that. Once you're in a lawsuit, you then have the power of the subpoena.
Question is, a lot of families probably can't afford the price of, you know, the financial aspect.
Denny, on that end, you know, the lawyers across the country, you know, usually charge a certain percentage, anywhere from 25% to 33%.
And there's some things that I'm looking at for these cases. So
yeah, the lawyer on this case would probably have to do it more for the justice part, because
exactly.
like Pat said, this is just to get people under oath, people into court, because there's probably, I don't know this individual, this guy, but there's a lot of cases like this, there's probably no money or no assets. So, you know, there's nothing
mm-hmm.
there for the lawyer to get other than saying, I'll do it for you.
Also, but the you know, you can go to his car. You can go to his insurance. Who is his carrier?
Yep.
That is something I've done that for homeowners. I've assisted with homeowners where there's been a murder.
Yeah, you may have a point there, because
this was done in a car.
So that's a good point.
So there's certain things. $10 says if the person that did this is listening, so I don't want to tip our hand. But there are some things that we've been able to do for these other families. I don't see why we can't come up with something just as lovely as this, because I have worked with lawyers to get them to sue this, and I've been working with Oklahoma lawyers that I trust, very few of them, by the way, who can take on somebody's situations and cases in the right way and know how to steer it correctly, because this is difficult. This is all politically motivated, in my opinion, from various levels. And that ME's office got to go. Those people at the helm have to go. Katrina Hill Rivera did not need to die. And certainly when they stamp these death certificates like this, what are they saying to the families, to the community? It's an outrage.
Yeah.
So.
And if this person did this to one girl, he'll do it again. And law enforcement has an obligation to the communities that they serve to follow things through. And I find that is a problem here. They don't take it to the next level to protect the citizens of the city are in jeopardy, because they are not following through on individual cases.
But when you have no accountability in these counties, again, and people look away for whatever reason. You know, Oklahoma is filled with oil. Oklahoma is filled with money. Oklahoma is filled with meth labs. Oklahoma is filled with a lot of drugs. That's a very wealthy state, and it's the poorest in the country as far as justice.
Hmm.
We are getting close to time. Michelle, there's a parent now listening someplace. What can you say to them to not give up? Because you've done an amazing job of not giving up.
Just keep your faith and never give up. Just keep on going, and justice will prevail. We just got to get there together.
We want to thank you so much for coming on. We're going to
keep this
updated. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you to the CrimeWire team, our director of research, Kim Colton, the public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com, Delilah. Our next show will be Tuesday, November 23rd, 2010. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes that interrupt and wreak havoc on families looking for answers, seeking justice. Pat?
Oh, good night. I'm sorry.
No,
I
thank you for joining us on Crime Wire. We're always welcome your support and value our guests. If you'd like your case to be featured on Crime Wire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com or hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show by going to crimewire.blogspot.com or crimewiresite.com. Turn on your volume and the computer will automatically play.
Okay, remember that we ensure that your voices will be heard when there is nowhere else to turn. Visit our website at www.crimewiresite.com. Good night and God bless from the Crime Wire team, Vito Colucci Jr., Denny Griffith, Susan Murphy Milano, and Pat Caristo. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks,
good night,
Susan.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.